Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and Alice Bryant. Later, we will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, farmers in India's northern state of Himachal Pradesh are now growing herbs instead of traditional crops such as rice, wheat, and corn. They are trying to save their farms from monkeys eating their crops. For years, farmers have fought a losing battle with increasing numbers of the red-faced rhesus macaques. The animals invade farms in several northern Indian states, searching for food and destroying crops worth millions of dollars. Many have given up on farming because of the monkey problem. Officials estimate that 40% of the farmland in the area is unplanted. Agriculture experts say switching to herbs will protect farmers' crops and bring higher profits. Monkeys do not attack crops such as aloe vera, an herb with medicinal properties. Farmers can make more money as demand for herbs increases from Indian companies making medicinal and personal care products. India's herbal product industry is worth $4 billion and growing quickly. Arun Chandan is regional director at the National Medicinal Plants Board for North India. He told VOA, "We teach farmers the kind of crop they can grow according to the soil, the water, and air in that area, what market exists for it, and how he can increase his income by 2 or 3 times. Some farmers have already started planting herbs with help from the Medicinal Plants Board. The group provides planting material and training. Farmer Bipin Kumar in Magru village says he has planted aloe vera, stevia, and lemongrass. He now plans to expand to other herbs. He added that the herbs survive even in relatively drier soils and are not damaged by dense fog that is common in the hills. Experts have listed about 100 herbs that can be grown on the empty farmland where villagers stopped growing crops. So far, nearly 4,000 farmers have switched to growing herbs in 7 North Indian states. In Himachal Pradesh, the number is 300. Arun Chandan says the most successful farmers have strong business sense and are willing to innovate. His organization also links farmers in distant villages with possible buyers to make sure they can market their crops. Monkeys are also becoming problems in cities, including India's capital, New Delhi. They are famous for stealing food and even mobile phones. In December, experts gave lawmakers advice on dealing with monkeys often seen around Parliament. The experts advised leaving the animals alone and not making eye contact. The monkey population has increased since India banned their export for biomedical research in 1978. But many in Hindu-majority India respect and feed the animals. They link the monkeys to the Hindu god Hanuman, who takes the form of a monkey.
Operators of Japan's Fukushima nuclear plant have predicted it will run out of storage space for radioactive water in 3 years. The Tokyo Electric Company, or TEPCO, recently said the contaminated water will likely fill up all the plant's available tanks by summer of 2022. Three reactors at the Fukushima plant suffered meltdowns after a 2011 earthquake and tsunami shut down the plant's cooling systems. It was the world's worst nuclear disaster since Chernobyl in 1986. The accident forced 160,000 people to flee contaminated areas near the plant, and many never returned. Since the disaster, radioactive water has leaked from damaged reactors and mixed with groundwater and rainwater at the plant. The water is treated to remove harmful materials and stored in large tanks. But TEPCO has said the treatment process cannot remove all radioactive particles from the water. Plant officials say more than 1 million tons of water is currently being stored in nearly 1,000 tanks. TEPCO says it plans to build more tanks to hold additional water. But even then, it predicts it will only be able to accept a total of 1.37 million tons. That would cause Fukushima to run out of space for water in 2022. A government group studying future storage solutions have identified several possibilities for dealing with the continued supply of contaminated water. One proposal would involve the controlled release of water into the Pacific Ocean. Some nuclear experts, including members of the International Atomic Energy Agency, have said they believe that plan is the most realistic. However, fishermen and many people living in the area strongly oppose that proposal. They have said releasing the water into the ocean could cause widespread damage to Fukushima's fishing and agricultural industries. Additional methods under consideration include ground injection or converting the radioactive water to steam or hydrogen and releasing it into the atmosphere. Some nuclear experts have warned that additional long-term storage might be necessary if officials cannot decide on any of the proposals under consideration. I'm Brian Lynn.
Sometimes we are asked to give an answer or opinion about something when we don't have enough information or are not sure about it. We call such an answer or opinion a guess. People make guesses about a lot of things, like the cost or amount of something, what someone did or might do, and the cause or effect of something. There are many ways to express guesses in English. On an earlier Everyday Grammar program, we talked about using modal verbs such as could, might, and must for making guesses. Another way to make a guess or speculate is with phrases. And on our program today, we will talk about 6 common phrases Americans use to make guesses. To begin, off the top of my head is a phrase that means from the knowledge you have in your memory. When you use this phrase, you are making a guess or estimate without thinking about it much before you answer. This often happens when you do not have much time to answer. For example, imagine that your vehicle was damaged in a traffic accident. You ask an auto technician to make an estimate about the cost of repairs. This is what he says after briefly examining the damage.
Off the top of my head, it should be around $800.
Sometimes, however, we use this phrase to state that we cannot remember something, are not sure, or do not know the answer, like in this exchange.
What is the capital of Comoros?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I can find out.
Next, sometimes you can base an opinion or guess on things you already know. We use the phrase, I wouldn't be surprised, to say that an action or fact is certain or likely based on what we know about someone or something. With this phrase, we are expecting something to happen because it is typical. Listen to this example.
I wouldn't be surprised if she won the book award this year. Her short stories have received much praise in the media.
This phrase is also sometimes used to say that an undesirable action or situation is expected, as in this example.
I wouldn't be surprised if the auto shop overcharged us. The last time I went for repairs, my bill was too high.
The verb know is also useful when talking about what you think will happen based on what you know. When we use it in a certain way, it means, considering how well I already know this person, place, or thing, I am almost sure of what will happen. Listen to a short exchange between two people, and I'll show you what I mean. Let's say they are roommates of a person named Vijay.
Vijay doesn't return until next week, so I'm going to borrow his grill.
Knowing him, I'm sure that is fine.
This phrase can be used with a person's name, a pronoun such as you, him, or her, a thing, or a place. Here's another example, this time about a thing.
Knowing my luck, it'll start raining as soon as I leave the house.
Next, we turn to the phrase, it's difficult to say. We use it to stress that a guess is difficult to make. For example, say two football teams are competing in a championship game, and someone asks you to predict which will win.
It's difficult to say. Both teams have had an unusually strong season this year.
We also use this phrase when the overall effect of a problem is hard to measure or has not been fully studied.
It's difficult to say what effect gun violence in the U.S. has had on tourism, but some countries have announced travel warnings.
There are 2 other ways of wording this phrase. It's tough to say, and it's hard to say. Now, on to I bet. This is a phrase we use to say we think something is probably true or will probably happen. Take this example about a person's health.
My throat has been hurting since last night. I bet I'll get sick by tomorrow.
Other times, We use it to make a guess about something when we are angered or amused by it. Earlier, for example, a speaker talked about her bad luck with rain. Listen to what she says this time.
I've been waiting all week to go for a swim. I bet it will rain again today.
And finally, we use the phrase, there's no way, to mean that we are certain something will not happen. It has the same meaning as there's no chance. Both are commonly used when talking about people or situations. For example, if you know your friend is afraid of heights, the friend probably would refuse to try a sport involving high places. Listen to this short exchange.
I really want Shelley to come skydiving with us.
There's no way you will persuade her. She is afraid of heights and hates flying in general.
By now, you might be wondering if you can simply use the word guess to make a guess. The answer is yes, as in this. I know how much you love learning English, so I'm guessing you'll be back next week for more. I'm Alice Bryant.
Our national parks journey takes us to an extreme landscape in Colorado. Around us are clear lakes, aspen and fir trees, and mountain peaks that rise over 4,400 meters. Welcome to Rocky Mountain National Park. The vast Rocky Mountains range extends from the western United States up to Canada. National parks in both countries protect many of the huge peaks. Here in Colorado, Rocky Mountain National Park covers about 1,100 square kilometers. Although it is much smaller than other Western parks like Yellowstone, it welcomes almost as many visitors each year. People from around the world come to experience its alpine or high mountain environment. In the spring and summer, wildflowers burst to life, and many kinds of butterflies arrive. In the fall, the aspen trees turn bright yellow and orange. In the winter, deep snow blankets the park. Its peaceful alpine lakes freeze over. One of the major sights here is the Continental Divide. The area in the high mountains separates the rivers that flow into the Pacific Ocean from the rivers that flow into the Atlantic Ocean.
The Rockies' huge glaciers form the rivers. Glaciers help tell the natural history of the land. Over millions of years, glaciers carved deep canyons out of rock. Erosion from wind and water formed the mountains' sharp summits that we see today. Rock at the top of these summits is some of the oldest found on Earth. It was not until 11,000 years ago that humans began living in the area. The Utes tribe settled here for part of the year thousands of years ago. Winter was too severe to survive. When the weather warmed, they lived in the green valleys and meadows and near the lakes.
In 1803, the U.S. government gained control of the land we now call Rocky Mountain National Park. It came as part of the Louisiana Purchase, which almost doubled the size of the United States. In the 1840s, American writer Rufus Sage came to the Rockies. He wandered the area from 1841 until 1843, spending time with fur trappers, Native Americans, soldiers, and hunters. His long and detailed account of mountain life was published in 1846. He called it Scenes in the Rocky Mountains. Rufus Sage wrote, "Further on were yet higher summits, surmounted by pines and cedars, raising their heads in stately grandeur far above the sweet valleys at their feet." Taken together, the scenery was not only romantic and picturesque, but bewitching in its beauty and repulsive in its deformity.
Beginning in the late 1850s, gold and silver rushes brought huge crowds to the Colorado Rockies. Miners arrived in search of the precious metals. They settled temporary cities. One of the best known is called Lulu City. It was settled in the late 1870s after miners discovered silver nearby. By 1880, more than 500 miners lived in Lulu City. It had a meat shop, a post office, and many houses and mining companies. Lulu City was short-lived. In just 5 years, miners left town, seeking other opportunities. Today, some visitors choose to hike to this ghost town, where they will find old cabins and remains of buildings. As more and more people came to the area, concern for protecting the natural environment grew. In 1909, the nature guide and naturalist Enos Mills began pushing for the creation of a national park here. He first climbed the towering Long's Peak when he was just 15 years old. Long's Peak is the area's tallest mountain, at 4,346 meters. Mills made the hike 40 times by himself during his lifetime, and almost 300 times as a mountain guide. Mills wrote and gave talks about the Long's Peak area to urge Congress to make it a national park. On January 26, 1915, Mills got his wish. President Woodrow Wilson signed the Rocky Mountain National Park Act to make America's 10th national park. The Denver Post newspaper called Mills the father of Rocky Mountain National Park.
Today, more than 3 million people visit Rocky Mountain National Park each year. Many visitors arrive by car. They drive the Trail Ridge Road, which winds through meadows and forests and up the mountains. The road was built in the 1930s during the Great Depression. At the time, many of the Western national parks were served by the railway. Travelers arrived on trains. But a railroad never served Rocky Mountain National Park. The National Park Service described it as always an auto park. The high number of visitors and vehicles caused concern. In the 1970s, park officials began managing crowds. They started using buses in the park and created a campsite system in the wild backcountry. Today, conservation efforts continue. Park officials educate visitors and urge them to respect the natural environment.
Rocky Mountain National Park's scenery and wildlife attract huge numbers of visitors. The park has over 480 kilometers of hiking trails. They include challenging climbs up some of the tallest mountains and forest hikes that lead to the park's many waterfalls. They also include trails to crystal blue alpine lakes. One leads to Mills Lake, in honor of Enos Mills. The view of Long's Peak from the lakeside is one of the finest views in the whole park. One of the most extreme hikes in the park is the Continental Divide Loop. The 86-kilometer path cuts through glacial valleys and past lakes and waterfalls. It takes most hikers at least 6 days to complete. Long hikes give visitors a chance to experience Rocky Mountain wildlife. Within the park are hundreds of elk and bighorn sheep, as well as a small moose population. The park's huge number of large animals makes it one of the best places in America for wildlife watching.
Butterflies fill the park's meadows. Some of the most common kinds are the Painted Lady, the Arctic Blue, and the Western Pine Elfin. Butterflies help researchers in the park study the effects of climate change. Scientists and volunteers collected information on butterfly populations from 1995 until 2011. They identified more than 140 butterfly species. Park visitors also come to fish, bike, and go horseback riding. The animals are permitted on most of the park's hiking trails. You can ride in the park on horseback. You can explore on foot. You can sleep under the stars. You can sit by a clear, quiet lake. However you visit Rocky Mountain National Park, you will likely find, in the words of Enos Mills, the paths of peace and a repose that is sweeter than sleep. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.